First speaker this afternoon is Bevan O'Regan. Bevan has been a Narrabri councillor for 21 years, three of those years as a mayor. You know, it's just been recently that Bevan is enjoying what he's doing in council more than ever before. Why do you think that might be? Well, seeing results, I'm sure he gets those, but there's another reason. Well, looking after the people, he's been doing that for a long time. It's actually because he feels totally at ease with saying exactly what he thinks. He has no restrictions on that whatsoever. And what a nice feeling that must be. Recently in council, he got a little bit annoyed with what other councillors had said about an important issue. So Bevan went out and jumped on the phone and ordered a truckload of sand. And he wanted that dumped in the car park outside the council chambers. He felt that a lot of the councillors would feel at home with their heads stuck in it. Something that is interesting that Bevan mentioned earlier on was that there aren't really three levels of government, there are two. Council is not a level of government. Now, like many other farmers, of course, Bevan is just out of the drought, been rather busy. Of late, he's been campaigning on property rights because many people have the right to own their property under threat. In August, Bevan helped form the Property Rights Committee. Since that time, they've attended 9 meetings across New South Wales and spoken. They're currently helping a farmer defend an action where he's been told he's got to pay $1.1 million for clearing some of his land. Now, if you ever think that being an activist isn't worthwhile or writing letters to the editor isn't worthwhile, you want to talk to Bevan, a prolific letter writer. The title of his talk is Your Property Rights, Urban and Rural. You'll have a chance to ask questions. Let's welcome Councillor Bevan O'Regan.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Yes, I'm lucky to be a councillor. I'm lucky to be a councillor in New South Wales because in New South Wales we have seminars to help us be councillors. As a matter of fact, in the mail last week I got a seminar on what's happening and how I can be helped. And if I want to write powerful proposals, prevent job burnout, go on to consultative committees, the time management studies, facilitation skills, I'm reading what I can do, you see. Secret formulas for all success. How to perform in front of a TV camera. Now that's important. How to handle the press. But the one that I do like, which is on Tuesday morning, the 1st of April, which is April Fool's Day, which could have some significance, I don't know. Where's Ken McFadden? This one is handling difficult people. Now that's on at Port Macquarie. The registration for this is only $297, which will be paid for by council. I can go across there. They'll pay for my fare across and pay for a couple of nights at a motel and look after me. So we don't have difficult people in New South Wales because we're trained to know how to handle them. So the McFadgens of this world don't exist in New South Wales because we're well looked after as councillors. The CPR committee was formed in August, and I said at every meeting that I attended, we've gone to 9 meetings across the state, I've said that if we were a republic, I wouldn't come to the meeting, and if local government was controlled by the federal system, it wouldn't be worth walking across the street, because that's the advantage that we're talking about, is that local government is in the state system, and our powers lay within that system. The advice that we've been giving people from our property constitutional committee is go to your council and check out your LEP, that's the local environment plan in New South Wales. In Queensland it's called a management plan. I don't know what it's called in Victoria, but I've checked out about 18 or 19 of these plans. They're all the same. There is no development consent needed to perform agriculture. No development consent needed. So if you want to clear trees, you want to plough your land, you want to graze your land, you want to crop your land, you want to drain your land, you want to spray your land, providing you don't intimidate your neighbour, providing you stay within the system of common law, no worries. And I'm pleased this morning, common law was mentioned many times by Malcolm McClure. And the other advice we've been giving people after they go to the council and check out that they're agriculture without consent is don't let the Department of Land and Water come onto your place if you don't want them on your place. Do not let them on the place. Even though in the Act it says that they can come on your place, the Act of Trespass still is a very active and live document. After we went to the meeting at Walgett, a chap rang me and said, look, we can't even hire a bulldozer down here. They're all flat out going day and night. A chap from up near the Queensland border said that he cleared 750 acres of heavy timbered country. The Department of Land and Water wanted to come on and check it. He said, I'm sorry, I'm not available, I'm going on holidays. When he came back from holidays, they again said, we want to come out, at your convenience, of course. And he said, yes, I'll just look through my diary. He said, well, I'm available in August 2004, and put the phone down. So really, the point I'm trying to make is they cannot come onto your property unless you give them permission. There was another chap at Narrabri, did some clearing. There's been absolutely no movement from the Department of Land and Water since we have become vocal. We became very vocal in August, September. One chap had a big fire. When I say a big fire, 750 acres of heavy timber in Windrose is a big fire. Lit up the whole mountain one night. You can see the silhouette of the mountain behind it. And when he was asked by a neighbour who gave him permission, he said, Bevan did. I said, well, I didn't give him permission. All I said to him was, go to your council and find out from your LEP, is your land listed one a rural agriculture? The answer is yes, and the rest is history. I'll try and be as brief as I can. I've lost about 6 minutes already doing that. But ladies and gentlemen, your house, your car, your fire policy, your acres in the bush, all have one very good common denominator, and that is you pay stamp duty. Now, stamp duty was never meant to be a large tax, although it is. It could be one-tenth or one-tenth, etc. But the reason you'd pay stamp duty, it is there to prove the intent of what you are going about. You just can't come and say, shake your hands, mate, I'm going to pay you next week for that $1 million property. You have to go through the titles office, and it's the best tax you'll ever pay, because the moment you pay, that titles officer becomes your servant. He is there to protect your investment, whether it be a fire policy or acres in the bush or a suburban town. That right is your right to the air, the soil, the water and the vegetation. In the last couple of months, I've learnt a fair bit about water. There is a challenge now on the water sharing plan. This only took place because the appeal finished last Wednesday, and the government, of course, is trying to cut water back. And the danger or the worry is that if they cut it back and cut it back and cut it back, the government will sell the surplus water, because in the Management Act, which I've got here, it says that the government can sell water under the new regime. All these features are related to common law, as I've said, and we have to observe common law. In 1828, Australia took on common law. The Australia Act cannot delete or dilute any powers, because all the Australia Act did was actually break some of the links that we had with London. The 1828 Courts Act is a direct link to 1688 Bill of Rights, Magna Carta, and it was adjusted and taken into Australian law as a domestic law in July 1828, and the Australia Act has no effect on it. I now want to talk about use rights. Use right is the thing that's going to stick to us, it's going to hold us no matter what the governments do in the future. Unless there is a magnanimous change, or if we change to a republic, well then my use rights laws haven't had much up their sleeve. But use right is the right to use your property. If you want to purchase a building block in a residential area of town, you purchase the block in the residential area of town. You can't put up a factory in the residential area of the town. And similarly, you purchase a agricultural block in the bush, your council issues you in New South Wales a 149 certificate. That 149 certificate says exactly what you can do, and nothing can change after that, because the idea of use right is, and it's guaranteed in our 1979 EP&A Act under sections 106, 107, guaranteed that that use right goes on forever. Now that's a long time, because if continuance is 107, use right is 106, section 24, and that says no other instrument can overtake that. That's good enough for me, because I don't care, the government can bring out any law they like. If we have a 149 certificate to say we can farm, we can clear, we can plough, any other subsequent law is, I believe, null and void. I could say use rights are explained in LEPs. Use right is tied to the land, not to the person. The use right goes on forever. It goes on forever because until the use is changed. Now, you can't just have a farm and say, look, I'm going to put up 1,000 sow piggery. That is a change of use from broadacre agriculture, and then you have to get council permission, because you are then going into intensive agriculture. Irrigation is not intensive agriculture, because the land and the water are tied together as one stratum. If that's the perimeter of your property, you own the water to the bowels of the earth. And this is where Bob Carr, I believe, in New South Wales, has acted incorrectly, because they have separated water from land so that water can be sold separately as a unit. And I was telling Tony Pitt at lunchtime, water is a $90 billion a year renewable asset in Australia. the water barons now got their tentacles into the water in Melbourne, the water in Adelaide, but that's another story. Your council with your LEP is a very, very valuable instrument. Your LEP debates your submissions, it's put on display for 28 days, and then it comes back, it's debated again, it goes to the minister and then signed off. Now, the government realised that this is pretty democratic. So I believe in Queensland it's called strategic planning that's coming on. In New South Wales it's going to be called Plan First. And I would say after the re-election of Bob Carr, it is going to be on the agenda very soon. Plan First is going to mean that local government will have very little say at a local level. It will be planned in Sydney. Those plans will be sent back. This is what you can do. Now, I rang a lady in Surat the other day, and she said 90% of their plan in Queensland that they put up from that council, and now they have rejected 90% of what the people of Surat want. That is what you call central bureaucracy, central planning. Call it what you like. Call it socialism, whatever you like. I sort of want to reiterate that when you purchase land, you employ a solicitor to search for your titles. Your council plans administer zoning. You work the soil, you collect the water, you make sure you don't pollute the air to worry your neighbour. You grow vegetation and you can clear that vegetation. That vegetation is yours. I believe councils that put on tree preservation orders are out of order themselves. They can certainly have tree preservation orders to preserve trees, lop trees or remove trees on nature strips, parks, gardens, roads, PP boards and all the rest of it. But I think when it comes to private land, I don't think it's ever been tested. I've jumped over a lot of things like how many acts of parliament there are, but I can just hold up, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 there, 7, 8 acts of parliament that I've used, Real Property Act, a Conveyancing Act. All these are updated to either June or August of last year. But the most important thing that I haven't mentioned, a lady in Newcastle found this Commission of Inquiry into Land Tenures. That's the one we've had reprinted page by page. But it was the Commission of Land Inquiry into Land Tenures in 1976, commissioned by Sir John Kerr under Letters Patent. And the interesting part of it is, on the whole chapter on compensation, now remember that if anybody takes anything from you, we've always said, you know, they've got to pay. It says here in compensation on the page 63, thus Magna Carta 1215 section 29 guaranteed that no free man shall be deceased of his freehold or liberties or free customs but by the law of the land. Now the law of the land of course is if you take something you must pay it back. So the fact that in New South Wales they've taken up to 87% of the water from some people's entitlement rights and paying them pittance, and in some cases not paying them anything. Anyone that has had a water licence under 5 years, they won't pay them anything. There's one word for that. I think it's called theft. That's all it is, it's called theft. Well, I know a Lucan farmer in the Crindai area. He's been chopped back by 87%. I know another farmer in the Maules Creek area in the Narrabri. He's been cut 73%. In fact, the water was never there in the first place. To give you an instance, the Maules Creek, which is a very small creek, probably no one's ever heard about it, they issued licence to the tune of drawdown of 10,500 megalitres. The recharge, annual recharge by the engineers tell us that it's no more than 2,200 megalitres. So quite obviously they've overestimated by 5 times, created confusion, and now the government throw their hands up, we've got to now fix this situation. Everybody in that Maules Creek area is cut back by 73%. The fact that some of the people at the top end of the creek could never ever pump the water because the water's not there. So really, we're looking at a type of conspiracy, I believe, that's been put together, particularly with water. Water and land and looking after land is something that I think is dear to our hearts. It's got to be dear to our hearts because if it's not, ladies and gentlemen, I think there's not too many more important things about than your house, your car, and a few things like that when we're talking about property. The only other thing that I would like to say with this Commission of Land Inquiry, the information that we've got from a Queen's Councillor in London is exactly the same. He has used exactly what was in this. When I said this came about us by luck, it was found in a hospital jumble stall, bought for 20 cents. We think it's out of print, but I do believe I could have got it out of the library in Canberra. We certainly couldn't buy it anywhere. We tried to buy it. We copied 3 or 4 copies. Because it says that people do have those rights, perhaps someone was looking down upon us and said, well, you need that document. I'm damn pleased we've got it because it certainly helped me along the way. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much indeed, Bevan.
Are you aware that in Durham Holdings versus the New South Wales government that the right to fair compensation for confiscated assets was removed? It was removed on the basis of Essenberg versus the Queen.
Absolutely. As soon as we put this before the New South Wales farmers put that directly under our nose, and we said that in this case, we are not looking for compensation as basically the genuine right to farm. I've got the copy of that Durham Holdings case. They were looking for, I think, $90 million compensation. They only got 20. They were looking for $70 million. We said we're not interested in that. All we're interested in is the right to farm.
Thank you. Yes, Tony.
Tony Pitt. Bevan, in 1988, there was a referendum and the Australian people voted no to the establishment or the continuance of local government, and they voted no to the local government having the powers to write bylaws or administer. Now, what's your understanding of the legal situation there?
The referendum in 88 was, if I can remember, and I'll try and do it as clearly as I can, Tony, was, do you want local government to be recognised in the federal... That's the way I read it. Do you want local government to be recognised?
In relation to the area of not inviting people onto your property unless they're there by permission, you're not coming onto your land without permission, we have a public weighbridge on our land. Where would that fit in? Any ideas?
Was there any caveat or right of way given to the people with the public weighbridge?
It's privately owned.
Yes.
It's our own, on our own land.
Look, I'm not sure. When you call it a public weighbridge, do you put a sign up outside the gate to say public weighbridge?
No. But it is known by the community. People come in and use it.
That would be generally known, but no, I wouldn't like to answer that legally. If there are no signs to say there's a public weighbridge, I think you could say, look, we don't want you on the place.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes.
Bevan, if we become a republic, will all this not matter? And if that is the case, we should all be thinking very seriously of putting more effort into the constitutional monarchy debate.
Ted? The reason I've said that, Ted, was in 1828 we accepted the Courts Act of England. All the benefits of common law, all those rights became locked into Australia, into each state's act, and each state has accepted that. Mr. Beanland wrote to me from Queensland, Mr. Shaw from New South Wales, and they've all said that the 1828 is locked into each state's Bill of Rights.
Bevan, I was just wondering what you thought about the theory that the more intact forests we have, the more rain will fall on them.
My feeling is that forests do attract rain, but look, that's only my own personal theory. I can't comment on that.
Bevan, you were talking about your rights to do what you like under an LEP that the council has.
Yes.
At any stage, council could change the LEP to anything they want.
Not really, because section 106 and 107, Wayne, basically guarantees continuance. And if it guarantees continuance in the dictionary, it means going on forever.
Out of ignorance, Bevan, if you could ask the audience, I thought this morning, and I think it was Malcolm, made a point that Mr. Justice McHugh of the High Court seemed to feel that the Australia Act did in fact supersede these older English Acts. Am I right? Did anybody pick this up this morning?
That is correct. That's exactly what I said. It has severed our English accidents. It has severed our ties with England. But in 1828, the 1828 Courts Act became domestic law in Australia. Full stop, that's our law. We took it on board. We took that on board as our domestic law. It ceased to become an English law after the 1828 Courts Act. And that's the important part.
What about a precedent in land usage? Wouldn't that establish your right to do what has been done all the time on your land?
That is existing use.
Yes.
Section 106 in that covers that exactly. It means existing use in a prohibited area. I'll give you an example. If there was a piggery up the top end of this street just past the RSL, had been there since the year dot, and that piggery was continuously used, that piggery could stay there. But immediately that chap sells that piggery, bang, it's gone. But he would have existing use in a prohibited area. To start that new sawmill, you would now need special permission from council, but because you've got existing use, yes, that's quite correct. Existing use is precedent, yes.
Thank you very much indeed for your time. Bevan O'Regan.